So we can welcome somebody in our home. We can also be welcoming at the grocery store. We can be welcoming at church. That this posture that we carry of welcome is what we carry with us.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javed. Today we are joined by Dr. Laura Murray, the Director of Spiritual Engagement and Innovation at Fuller Seminary's Center for Spiritual Formation. Laura is also the founder of the Digital Silent Retreat Ministry, which is rooted in the practice of hospitality to provide brave and courageous spaces for people to connect with God and others. Today, we are talking about her new book, Becoming a Person of Welcome, The Spiritual Practice of Hospitality. Thank you so much for joining us today, Laura. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad that we'll be talking about hospitality because that topic is very relevant to every church, whether you are part of urban community, our podcast audience generally tend to be urban communities. But I think hospitality is a good topic for church ministries, parachurch ministries. So I'm looking forward to having this discussion with you. But before we get started, please tell us very briefly about your family. We can get to know each other a little bit, but more importantly, I want the audience to connect with you as a person before they hear your professional understanding of hospitality.
Sure. Thank you. Well, I'm married for 20 years and we have two kids and they're teenagers, which is great fun. But if anybody knows teenagers, that's also challenging. And then we also have two dogs. So one is very energetic and extroverted and the other one is introverted and not energetic. So it's really pretty funny when we go on walks. My family of origin, I should say, I was born in Houston in the United States. My family immigrated from Tehran and we are Armenian. So I grew up in a household that had three different languages, ate Persian food, and I was the kid that just wanted American hamburgers and pizza. So yes, kind of a little bit of a first generation immigrant background, although you can't tell it in my married name nor my accent.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful thing to have because I think that's exactly why I think you are a very special guest for this particular topic. Yesterday, I was with a family, an immigrant family from Afghanistan, and they made so I invited them first. So they came to our church, of course. So they've been coming to our church ever since. So first time they landed here. We decided to just open our house. I do that with almost every new family that comes to our church, which is very different for a senior pastor of a church to do. Usually that doesn't happen, and it surprises people still to date. So when I did that, it became sort of like, I don't know, it's one of those cultural things people don't understand. They will not stop talking about how they want to have us in their house, which is very different from my brothers and sisters from other backgrounds. But it was interesting that yesterday we were with them last night, and it was good Persian food because basically Afghan food and Iranian food, very much similar. But I'm glad that you shared your background. And I think your Eastern and Western background, because of your parents and you grew up in that culture within your family, will help us to understand more as you share about your book, because it's easy to write a book, but it's a different thing when you support that book with the personal life experiences. So let's get to your book. From the title of your book, Becoming a Person of Welcome, The Spiritual Practice of Hospitality, I get the impression that you believe hospitality is more of an attitude and a presence than a physical space or service. How do you define hospitality?
Well, I have learned that it is easier to describe hospitality than to define it.
Sure.
So I will give you a short definition that is in my book, and then I ask the reader to expand on it, and then I'll describe it a little bit. So I consider this base definition that it is a posture of welcome that we can take wherever we go. So we can welcome somebody in our home. We can also be welcoming at the grocery store. We can be welcoming at church. That this posture that we carry of welcome is what we carry with us. So let me unpack a little bit of what that can mean. So welcome really involves two things. One is the internal and one is the external. So internally, if we have freedom, if we have joy, if we have wholeness, if we understand what it is to care for the stranger, then we have this way of seeing other people. We have our eyes on other people. So we're aware of other people. We're curious about other people. But that is the internal that needs to be taken care of that we often don't talk about when it comes to hospitality. We often talk about the external, which is good as well. The external is the space, it's the environment. And we have limited it to being, a nice space or a space filled with food, although that's very good. But it also is a protective space that you are caring for people. And so there is a measure of the environment that we are welcoming somebody into. So there's the internal and the external. And so that requires preparation, that requires our own transformation. That requires noticing things. And as I say all these things, I imagine the listener may be a little bit overwhelmed that I've never thought about internal, I've never thought about external. The truth is, you probably are already practicing welcome in ways that you don't even realize it. As you express kindness to somebody, as you express mercy to somebody, as you notice somebody. And so my hope is that as we look at hospitality, we don't limit it to a place or a building, but that we carry it wherever we go and that we can create these small moments of welcome, these small moments of hospitality, and the big ones.
You talk about protected space. So externally, of course, you want to make sure bringing that idea into a church welcome center, let's say, right? So in that welcome center, you want to make sure it's protected in a sense that a family shows up, they have children, and we want to make sure that they be feel safe, and so that's protective. I'm just bringing some example, right? But how does that work in internal? Like, how does this protective space works in internal preparation? How do you make that protected space?
That's a great question. I think it's an awareness of the other person and what they might be going through. So when we read in scripture that God constantly is calling the Israelites to remember your stranger status, remember where you came from. I think that part of that helps us to remember what it is like to be vulnerable, remember what it is like to be in need. And then as we remember that, then when we see somebody, we go, okay, they need these things. They may need something from us. They may need encouragement. They may need something practical. But they also need something else. They need some type of guarding, maybe somewhere to where they can be not just emotionally safe, but physically safe. And so when we remember our stranger status, when we remember our own vulnerability and our need to be welcomed, our need for God, then we are able then to notice that there are other people that are that way as well. And then we can do that work.
Excellent. And I think that is something will help with this notion that churches are one of the most judgmental zones, and I think that will help when brothers and sisters have this kind of mindset. They are aware of others people's need, which goes with scriptures. Scripture literally teaches us think of the interest of the others. So I think that will hopefully remove this notion that, oh, they're going to judge me. And sometimes that judgment is not just how you look, which is also in some circles true. It's about, oh, but if they know who I am, what I have done. And that's the main problem, because I was just talking to my church congregation. I said, the church is not just a, you know, a place to come and be fed in with the word of God, but it's also a hospital for the sick, which is an old phrase that I heard somewhere a long time ago. But somebody came afterwards and said, I'm so glad that you said. I'm like, wow, there are still people who do not know that. And if we don't care for the sick, whether spiritually, physically, mentally, then, of course, we're going to lose the opportunity of hospitality. But let me take you to your introduction. In your introduction, you talked about you grew up in a household where three different languages were spoken. Your parents immigrated or immigrated from Tehran, I believe you said. And you are Armenian. So there's within Tehran, you already have another culture, so subculture of a culture. And then you are coming into a new culture of a Texan culture. So there's like a bunch of different cultures we're talking about.
Yeah.
So did you grow up in a culture of welcome and hospitality? When you think about that, did you learn from that cultural hospitality?
Yes, absolutely. Our home was very fluid in its hospitality.
Mm.
And some cultures are very fluid in their hospitality, which means there's always food, tea, pastries, something. It's always ready because you're expecting that somebody's going to knock on the door and show up. That just was it. And you were always interruptible. So my parents were always interruptible. There was always, if we were eating dinner, they always brought up another chair and there was always plenty of food. It just was one of those things that you simply expected to be interrupted, which was very different than not every American household, of course, because I haven't been in every American household,
sure.
But in the ones that I had been in, it was very different. And so if I did show up and I wasn't expected, one time when I was in, I don't know if I was in elementary school or junior high, I showed up and the family wasn't expecting me. And they were supposed to be having a family meeting that evening and they were having tacos. And they said, well, you can stay until your parents come, but we don't have enough food for you. And so I sat on the couch while they all ate. That would have never happened at my house. I mean, we eat less so that the guests can eat as much as they want. And so there was also this generosity and this posture that the guest always receives more than the host does. That whoever comes, they always, and we make sure that they're fully satisfied. Now, that's a beautiful thing. And I will say there was kind of a dark side to that as well, which was as a kid, that was strange to me. You know, I thought this was our family time, where I thought, oh, I wanted time with mom and dad and anybody could interrupt it. Or I was in my room doing something and I had to come meet the guest and I had to sit and have tea for 30 minutes and all those things. So as a child, it wasn't always wonderful to me because I didn't want to be interrupted or sit with the adults. And sometimes, you know, my parents, in their generosity for the guest, every once in a while, just we were not forgotten, but more so you're not as important. And so as a kid, that seemed strange. So it's not perfect. I wouldn't say our culture was perfect, but we definitely learned this fluidity and this generosity of hospitality and the expectation that we were going to be hospitable. Like, it was just an expectation that it was going to happen.
I'm so glad that you're bringing up these experiences from your childhood and growing up, because I think that changes everything, how we as grown up react to certain things. So as you're talking, I can totally see why you would feel that, because you are a byproduct of two sets of cultures. And in those cultures, even though house church culture is setting the example, but the majority culture is still enforcing a certain idea, a certain type of idea of hospitality. So in my house is the same thing. So my wife is Caucasian, so therefore, and I'm the only one who is here. My rest of the family's in Pakistan, so they don't have much interaction with them. But I set that culture for them, so they're going to be more. I'm just thinking they're going to be like you, basically, because when I grew up in that culture where we never felt. I never felt the way you, but I am first. You know, I'm the first here, so I'm the so it's different. So for me, it's exactly how you're describing for your parents. My house is always open, and therefore, people are shocked too when they hear, "Oh, we just landed here in this church, and senior pastor is inviting us to his house." Yeah. That's to them. Some of them, I'm sure, it's weird. But I could see that because in Pakistan, that's how I grew up. My dad was pastor. Our house was never closed. It was 24/7 thing, and our food went into other houses. Other houses' food came to our house. It was like literally people were like, "What do you cook today?" Or such and such thing. What are you? Okay, send. So it was just like it's really a collectivism, basically what I'm looking at when you think about, because we are very individualistic culture when we talk about the United States or the West. But in that culture, I totally can see. And now think about you living in that, and you are enforced with, you know, you've been given that, like, okay, hey, you are individual, your preferences, your needs, you should be you first, right? And then you're like, but your parents have a different approach to that. No, it's a tribe. If we are together, we are. I love that. And I think I'm already seeing my children, like, you know, in the next 10, 15 years, they're young. My oldest is 8, 7, and my twin daughters are 4 years old. But I can see them struggling with the same thing. But the beauty of all of this is that you have the best of both sides. So that gives you better understanding of where are those boundaries, because I think boundaries are necessary even in hospitality, because that's sometimes I do acknowledge that my overdoing leaves no room for rest. So I think you're right in that. Let me ask this. In order to love others, we have to understand God's love first, right? We need to understand God loves, he loves us. Likewise for forgiveness. Does a welcome and hospitality fall into a similar framework?
Yes, it does. And we extend the hospitality that we have received from God. We extend the welcome as we have received it from God. Now, I will say we all have a certain amount of capacity to be welcoming and kind and hospitable and curious in and of ourselves. I mean, I think we have that in us to be able to do that, but we will absolutely hit our limits. We will hit our capacity, and it will drain us far faster, as well as I believe we will have less joy from it. When we receive God's love, which he wants us to receive, wants us to know, when we receive his joy, when we receive his welcome over and over again, and I think the safety and security that we always have a home in God. We always have a home in God. He comes looking for us. We can go looking for him. There's always that relationship there. That gives us such a security and such a belovedness and confidence in being loved that when we extend it to others, when we take it to others, we don't fear that we'll run out. Yeah. We don't fear that will run out, really. Kind of that generosity mindset versus scarcity mindset comes into play. So can we do it a little bit without him? I think so. But we won't have as much joy, as much security, and as far of a capacity and ability to be able to do it.
That's beautiful. Recently, a lady came to our church for worship, and it was her first time. And often you don't hear this on the first day. It takes some time. But she said this is her home. She has a home. What gives a person that feeling of welcome and belongingness? And again, I'm not saying that I hear this all the time, but
Sure.
it just happened. So I thought I'd just raise that question too. What gives a person that feeling of being at home, being welcome, and the belongingness that all of us are seeking?
Yeah, I love this question. And it's a hard question because it's different for different people.
Right.
But I want to answer it as a practitioner rather than, let's say, a researcher or somebody who studied it. I want to answer it as a pastor and a practitioner. And this is what I've read from stories and seen through stories. And there's three things that I was thinking about. One is this, again, this internal and external feeling seen, wanted. And that's when we ask about them. That's when we make eye contact. That's when we are curious about who they are. So we meet something within them internally. And I think also externally, there's a sense of safety that they have. There is a sense of there are values here in this place that align with my values. That there are protections there. And so there's, I think they have this sense, we have the sense of security when we go into a place. And then I was sitting, actually, as I was thinking through this podcast a few days ago, I was sitting in a very old sanctuary. It's of this church. And I was sitting there and I was, all of a sudden I realized home is also, or feeling that way is also part of being connected to other people's stories.
Right.
But there is a history in there's a history in physical places, but there's also a history in the church at large. There, that when we are welcomed into something bigger than just ourselves, we can be ourselves and we're seen and we're cared for. There is this sense of, oh, I belong. I can be me and I don't have to change. I don't have to adapt. I can just be me.
And I think this is true for even not only the people who are coming to your church or coming to your ministry, it's also for the staff and the pastors and the elders and the leadership. Because if they don't feel they belong, if they don't feel this is their home, doesn't matter how long they stay, they may stay for 4, 5, 6, 7, even 10 years. And then they're like, you know, it never felt like home. And I think that's a sad thing because you could be involved even though you're receiving. And I'm talking from a practitioner viewpoint. And that's, you will see in all congregation, it's not specific to a congregation. You will see people who are like, oh, I found, this is my home. I'm so happy. People are amazing. They talk, they're engaged. And then you, at the same time, you hear from someone, oh, it's so cold. I've been here. I was like, what do we need to do? What? And it goes back to what you just said. It just, every person has different need. They just want different things. And it's hard thing to help them when they are not willing to make that home. Because I think it's also, it at least in my experience, I think it falls on the person who is being welcomed too. They got to be some sort of desire that, okay, I want to make this place my home. We talked about earlier your parents' background or my background. Simulation doesn't happen overnight. It's a process, but you have to have a mindset. You can't be like, okay, I'm going to come here in the United States of America to enjoy the freedoms of the United States, but also I'm going to create my own little Pakistan. And then I'm going to sit in that Pakistan and I don't want anybody to come and tell me what to do. And that's also a problem. And I think you never feel at home because you never really embrace the place or the people. And we heard this phrase again, you know, our home is wherever we are, right? It's a romantic thing. Oh, wherever you are, that's our home. And I think in the church life, it's really, and I'm being very just, you know, right now I'm just being vulnerable because that's one of the biggest struggles, especially in the urban context. There are so many churches, people just, you know, you have brothers and sisters who make you so happy when they tell you like, oh, I found a home. And then you have other brothers and sisters, no matter how much you're trying, It's just constant struggle. So in the context of a church, visitors will return if they feel welcome. That's what we are hearing. That's what we have seen, and we try to do that. How can the leadership prepare themselves and embody hospitality and then be an example to the congregation? What do they need to do?
That's a great question. And I had my answers, and I think I'm going to add something else to them because of our conversation so far. The one thing I will say is the leadership needs to be secure in their own identity and in their own welcome that God has for them. So if we as leaders don't feel that we belong to God in the fullest way, that we can show up as we are with who we are, and that God always welcomes us home.
Right.
And we won't be able to welcome others. People will feel the neediness of the leader for them to accept them. Sometimes there's this relationship between the host and the guest that is, you can't explain it, but sometimes you can feel it. And you're like, oh, that person is very confident in who they are. They're very secure in their identity. And that makes me be curious. And that also might scare me if I'm not secure in my own identity. And so there is this relationship that happens between the host and the guest. So the more free a leader is in their identity and their home in God, the more free they are to be able to welcome another and to be able to let go when that person doesn't receive their welcome. That's the other piece. Like if they don't receive it, that's not on you. Like that's theirs. So that's I would say the first thing. And then we talked about this, remembering stranger status, just remembering that, remembering what it's like to feel that way, remembering what it's like to be on the outside. And then I think we've talked about this as well, just kind of those protections and holding the values of the place and to be able to keep those values in order to provide really security and clarity of who this church is about, what they're about. And so that provides a lot of security for people. But I think I wanted to say something about this idea, and you touched on it, about the difference between belonging and fitting in.
Yes.
So fitting in means I will change a part of me in order to fit in. Now, that doesn't mean we don't adapt, learn, grow. That doesn't mean we don't have sin that we need to confess from and be freed from. That doesn't mean those things, but that you change a core part of how God has created you in order to fit in. You will never feel belonging in a place.
Yeah.
But if you are able to go as yourself and are received as you, then you find that belonging. And I have to say, Dr. Alphonse, the other thing too that I've experienced, because it took me a long time to find places that felt like home. I realized that in the places that feel like home, people expect me to show up. They don't want the person who's fitting in. And they know me well enough to say,
very good point.
Why is that person showing up? But we want you to show up. And this sounds funny. And in some cases, they'll kind of get mad at me if I try to fit in or if I try to do something that's not me. Like, why did you do that? You know, like, be you. Like, we need what God has given you. We need how God has created you. So sometimes it's just as funny. I just named that because it's kind of funny. But for me, sometimes it's the people who expect me to show up that have helped me to realize that somewhere is home.
That's awesome. That's beautiful. Yeah. So we've been talking about physical spaces. We've been talking about internally, seeing that in the context of the church, since hospitality is about welcome and not necessarily about physical spaces or activity, how does that translate into the digital world? For example, some of our small groups are on Zoom. And some of them are only on Zoom and other are hybrid, but then majority of them are in person. But how do you build that? How do you translate those things that you're talking about in hospitality and welcoming into a digital world or digital space?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. First of all, I think for those doing hybrid, I think doing hybrid is very challenging. I think it is very challenging to be welcoming and warm and create spaces of connection. It can be done, but I think it's very challenging. You have two completely different environments, you know, unless you have two hosts or unless you have two people that are so, you know, that then it's, I just think it's very challenging to be able to do that. So I'll speak to the Zoom only, but it'll help the other environments as well. I think, again, the internal world does come into play. So are you anxious about the meeting? Have you prepared for the meeting? What tools do you have, you know, for the meeting? And so a lot of preparation goes into, just as much preparation goes into a Zoom meeting than an in-person meeting. And sometimes even more because you have the technical aspects. So the external, right? So the external aspect is preparation. Do you have technical help? And just having those things in place. And I think responding to those technical issues, just with calm, you know, just with slowing down your pace to be able to do that. I have found that unless it's intentional silence in a Zoom room, silence is not your friend, you know, unless you're intentionally doing it. It's not your friend. It gets awkward. People don't know what to do. It's more obvious. You're just staring at each other. And so if you can ask questions or just give warmth to the room, if you were just hanging out in a room and you were asking people questions, so do that a little bit. I have found that having people off camera is challenging. It doesn't create for that warmth in that space because you can't see their faces, things like that. And it's also giving them a sense of security online as well. Often if we have a retreat, in the beginning, I'll ask everybody to introduce themselves with very clear kind of connections, things like that. And they'll say name, where they're from and why they joined. And so what I'll do as the host is I'll try to connect people to each other. I'll see, oh, you're from New Jersey. Oh, so-and-so, they grew up in New Jersey. So you try to make those little connecting points. And so as the host, you really are helping cultivate their connection to one another. So there's tools to do that. There's different questions you can ask. So I could keep on going on, but really it's that internal preparation and the external preparation.
I like that idea of somehow giving them something that they can relate to and they are interested in. It goes back to what you already said in the beginning of the episode, that you got to think about what they want as you welcome them. We tend to think about hospitality in the home. And we, of course, in this episode, we talked about hospitality in the church and church environment. What does it look like in our workplace, running errands, or even when we encounter strangers? It doesn't matter where we are. How does hospitality work in those environments?
That's a great question. Well, you're not going to be surprised, but it takes preparation beforehand and a posture beforehand. So often I tell people the first thing to being hospitable is slowing down. It's simply slowing down. The moment you slow down, the moment you notice others, the moment you can tell they responded in a funny way, or you can catch if they shared something emotional.
Yeah.
But slowing down is the first thing. And I say preparation because you have to choose to slow down. We're not going to naturally slow down. So choosing to slow down, which allows you to notice. And then I would say asking kind of a question that's an observation. Let's say, you know, let's say you're at the grocery store and you notice somebody's name tag and it's, you know, unique. You know, you say, oh, I noticed your name. You know, seems unique culturally. Can you share with me like where you're from? I'd love to hear, you know, things like that. You just notice these things, or you ask something, you know, if somebody has a certain earring or they have a scratch on their hand from something, you know, if it's a coworker, oh, what happened? Can you tell me more about that? And just, it's these little moments at your kid's school when, you know, just those little moments, but I would say slowing down, noticing, and then being curious about what's the story behind that? Like, what's the story behind your name? What's the story behind the shirt you're wearing? What's the story? And Eugene Peterson, who was a pastor, he was a translator of The Message. He said, stories are verbal acts of hospitality. And I love that. Stories are verbal acts of hospitality. So when you ask somebody for their story behind something, you are being hospitable. I just found that's very, I loved that.
So as a takeaway for ourselves or to share with someone else, what is a doable step to become more of a person of welcome? What that would look like? Is there one thing that we can do, or two, three? What is it?
I think the first thing is to slow down.
Okay.
And I think the next thing would be to receive each day more and more of God's welcome. And then notice people and ask them about their stories.
Yeah, that's really good. As we close out, is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation?
I thought it was a really rich conversation, and I'm hopeful for the listeners that there's one thing that is lingering with them, one thing that caught their attention, one thing that maybe the Holy Spirit kind of saying, hey, pay attention to this.
Right.
And then I would encourage them to run with the Holy Spirit with whatever caught their attention.
Yeah. I think for me, it's the slowdown. That's my problem. And I think
so many of us.
Yeah, right. So that's every opportunity that I'm running toward, I'm losing so many because it's just so awful not being able to slow down and notice that, oh man, I missed this and this and this and this because I'm getting to that one. And even when you get to that one, you're like, okay, I gotta get to the next one. So with that being said, we gotta close this episode. So if listeners want to get in touch with you or find your books, what are the easiest ways?
The easiest way is my website, which is laurabmurray.com. Or if you want to go straight to the book, it's on Amazon. So you can go there and order that there.
Great. Our listeners can find all of that in the episode's description or on our podcast website. Now, as you may have noticed in previous episodes, I've done that. If you got to hear one of those episodes, I ask all of my guests to close our episodes with a joke. And the intention behind that is sometimes we deal with very serious topics and I don't like leaving people sad. But today was very actually refreshing topic. I love it. It was hospitality, welcome, very joyful. But still, I'm not going to let you go without telling us a joke. So tell us a joke.
I honestly was trying to, this is the most stressful part of my preparation. Because I don't really have one. I don't really
Come
have.
Come on. There got to be cultural jokes. There are so many jokes.
No, I don't. I don't have any. I know.
Oh,
isn't
boy.
It? I really do. I almost Googled a joke.
You should have. Why not?
I should have just to have one.
I say, go ahead, Google now.
And you want me to Google now? Favorite.
Oh, why not? It'll be your joke. Yeah.
I Googled Google clean joke.
Okay, good. That's a
to
very
make sure
good
it's
idea.
Clean. To make sure it's clean. Okay, let's see. Okay. It says, what do dentists call X-rays?
What?
Tooth picks.
That's really good. You see how easy it was? Now somebody will have fun with that joke. Thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Dr. Laura Murray. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.